The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I don't expect a recession. I think that we're on a good path to bringing inflation down. The most recent inflation data were quite encouraging, that we're making progress on getting inflation down.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
John Harper in for Drew this afternoon. That's Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. And it's always interesting when you hear Washington talk about inflation. That's their view of inflation. But your view and my view is what we've just paid at the grocery store this morning for a gallon of milk. What else did I get? I got a gallon of milk. I think I got some yogurt and I think a loaf of bread. And there was something else. There was, a bag of grapes. It was $28. Hello, $28. It's like, yikes. You know, and there's nothing there really to make a meal. Yeah, you can have breakfast with some grape and yogurt. Let's take a look at inflation. And yeah, it's down. And you've heard the term Bidenomics. So we're going to connect some dots on the political spectrum as well as the financial one right now, looking at inflation and your wallet and mine with Chris Temple, who's the editor and publisher of the National Investor. Chris, welcome back to Relevant Radio. Interesting. When you look at where Ronald Reagan was at this very moment in time, as he was facing re-election 40 years ago, his poll numbers were almost identical to where Joe Biden's numbers are today. Inflation was a real problem then. Inflation is a problem today. And then the magnificent way that Ronald Reagan and the GOP just framed Reaganomics. And then all of a sudden, from this dark period of our time, not only economically, we come into this era of prosperity, or so it seems. And now we see the Biden administration trying to do Reaganomics again and recreate some of that magic. Whether or not they do that, I don't know. But what do you make of some of the new numbers and the fact that inflation is cooling after I spent $28 for a gallon of milk, some grapes and yogurt this morning at the store?
Hey, John, how are you?
Good.
You know, look, I had someone explain this to me the other day, and I wasn't smart enough to come up with this, but let's say that today that basket of groceries cost you $100. Next yep. year, it costs you $200. That's 100% inflation. The following year, it costs you $300. Now we're down to only a 50% inflation rate. And if the following year, it costs you $400, now we're down to a 30% inflation rate, and I'm a hero. You want to put me on Mount Rushmore. That's what we're being sold right now. And those are obviously extreme sure. numbers and extreme example. But if you go to pre-COVID, the price level using the government's massage figures is over a 20% increase across the board in everything. That's wholesale. Now, if you're own spending habits are different. Yours might be more or less. But that's the threshold that we're at. So we've got this chronically higher inflation that is seeing the increase go up less, so at least for the time being. But the problem is still there. And it's a problem of the central bank having caused this as a first matter with way too much money printing. You know, they yep. printed 30% of all the dollars ever brought into being in a little over 2 years. And also it's a fiscal situation where I think the last time you and I talked, we were talking about this. The Fed is an enabler of irresponsibility and unlimited deficit spending by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And when the government is enabled to do that, heck, they're going to continue to run a credit card till kingdom come. I mean, they're like a teenage kid. If you give him or her a credit card and say, you can do whatever you want with this thing, daddy's going to cover it no matter what you do. You're going to sure. have an orgy.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
of spending. And that's what we got.
Yeah. We flooded, as you said, you know, we just flooded the country with money coming out of COVID. And, you know, when you look back historically, it doesn't make any difference who's in the White House. It could be Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Obama, Biden, Trump, whoever. There's always plenty of fingers to point in terms of budgets, deficits, printing money, putting stuff out there, inflation or not inflation. And, you know, we love those administrations when things are going well, and we don't like the administrations when things aren't going well. But also a bigger picture, China's post-pandemic reopening isn't going so well. What are some of the economic implications for the rest of the world, especially the United States?
Well, it's interesting because China, arguably, John, is where we probably should be by now and maybe within a year or two. You get to a point where you have just ladled so much debt onto the shoulders of businesses and the government and consumers that it's all you can do to just service the debt. Forget about paying any of it off. And for all of the economic accomplishments that China has had in the modern age, you know, going back roughly 20 years or so, for all of the construction and building and all the rest of this stuff, they have had the highest debt to GDP ratio, when we talk about total public and private debt, of anybody on the planet, greater than Japan, greater than Europe, and greater than the US of A. And so they're at a place now where trying to jumpstart the economy after they came out of their hard COVID lockdown, it's not that easy because everybody is just slogging by to exist and to service existing debts. So the question a lot of people have had is, how does this work into the other side of the world, where in the case of the U.S., we don't yet have a recession. We don't yet have anything approaching the deflation that is starting to take hold in China.
Right.
And what do we do? You know, between China and Japan, they have completely negated and then some by their easing of monetary policy, Japan especially in this case, what the ECB and Australia and the Fed and the Bank of Canada and the Bank of England have done to try and stamp out inflation. So they're really working at cross purposes, and it's made a jumble of commodity prices. You know, one minute they're up because you think the world's going to keep growing. Next minute they're down because China, as they did overnight, comes out with bad numbers, et cetera.
Chris Temple on inflation here on the Drew Mariani Show at 888-914-9149. As we said at the beginning of this segment, inflation is what you and I pay for the last time we've been in a grocery store. How are things going for you? 888-914-9149. I suppose if there's a silver lining in this cloud, it's that the direct financial exposure that America has to China is relatively limited, not only in the World Stock Index Fund, but in some of the other funds that we look at, versus a lot of the countries in Asia that really depend on China's economy for their own growth.
Well, that's true, John. We don't have a market dependence, speaking of financial markets, all that much. You know, a lot of people every now and then put out these scaremongering tactics. China's going to dump its debt. China and Russia and India are getting together for a new currency that's going to put the dollar in the ash heap of history, et cetera, et cetera. All of those things are dramatically overstated. What is not overstated, and frankly, I think is understated, and is going to add back to the inflation equation in a bad way in the years to come, is the fact that we do remain very much dependent on China for a host of raw materials that we need, not only for the day-to-day economy, but beyond that is the Biden administration and others, and for some good reasons, are wanting to build out this slower carbon green economy of the future.
Yeah.
Most of the raw materials, metals, critical minerals that we need for that, we don't have them. Or if we have them, this administration is not allowing them to be produced. They're trying to browbeat allies to sell us theirs. They're making deals with, of all places, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, where notoriously, and the Pope has spoken out against this, the UN has spoken out against this, we're going to get critical metals so that Americans can drive EVs. You know, from what, a country where child labor is abused. You got kids 10 and 12 years old up to their neck in mud and chemicals to give us cobalt, nickel and things like that. It's ridiculous.
Let
so we're going to pay for that. And that, you know, that and China both are where the inflation picture is going to turn negative again in the years to come, because we don't have these things. We're going to have to pay up for them.
Chris Temple, let me ask you a naive question. Why can't we do that here? We have the know-how. We have the people. Certainly it would create jobs. Is it the fact that we don't want to pay $4,000 for the computer when we can get it for $999?
That is a part of it. You know, the whole idea of global trade to begin with, well before we had this discussion about electric vehicles and battery metals, was where can we get the lowest cost labor? What where can we get the cheapest goods? And so that's why for a long time, the U.S. and some other Western nations, or most other Western nations, outsourced all this stuff. But now it's coming back to bite us, because we're in a vulnerable place. We do have the ability in this country to produce a lot of the cobalt, the nickel, the copper, the uranium, the oil and gas, and all of these things that we need to lessen our dependence on other countries. You know, China just several days ago came out with export bans on two of the more exotic kind of rare metals that are needed to make computer chips. And we don't get that here. So now we got to figure out where we're going to get that stuff. So there's been an economic reason for years why we've always wanted to get this stuff from other countries. And there is the hypocritical American NIMBY attitude as well, which stands for not in my backyard. You know, we all want to go to the PTA meeting and say, look at how wonderful and green I am, because I drive an electric vehicle, or I have an electric boat, or, you know, I've just upgraded my home to have solar power and stuff like that. But we don't want to acknowledge the part of where those things come from. It's not very pleasant all the time. We should and could be doing it here and with other more trustworthy allies, where you have first world labor standards, you have first world environmental standards. But unfortunately, this administration has stopped almost all of that. There's been a few cases where through IRA money or the Defense Production Act, there is some money going into developing some of the critical metals that we need in the U.S. But in the grand scheme of things, John, it's a pimple on a flea compared to what we really need.
We're hearing the expertise of four decades of experience in the financial and investment industries with Chris Temple, the editor and publisher of The National Investor, talking about inflation, which is very personal to you and me every time we go into the grocery store or pull up to the gas pump. Although if there is a little bit of good news here, crude oil prices were down 1.3%. And the folks at Gas Buddy and the people who do follow those things claim that by Halloween, you and I will be paying $1 a gallon less than we are right now for some gasoline. Let's be hopeful that that happens. We use the word recession a lot. And in the introduction, you heard Janet Yellen talk about, I don't think there's going to be a recession. Paint the picture for us. If there is a recession here in the United States, what happens? What happens to jobs? What happens to wages? What happens to prices?
Well, this whole thing, John, has confounded everybody, including yours truly to an extent. We have things going on in the economy and in the world in the last few years that have never happened before. None of us can remember a time when you had such wild monetary inflation, when you had the start of what I really do believe is a World War III already over commodities and currencies that is going to give us new dynamics still in the years ahead. You know, we have a situation where coexisting together, you just had Ed Bastian, the CEO of Delta, gushing about record traffic, record revenue, record profits for Delta. The story is much the same for air traffic generally. There was record traffic for the 4th of July weekend. Gasoline demand is up at or near records, even though there is some stress on supplies. I would differ with that Gas Buddy take, because I think that a lot of people are whistling past the graveyard, not realizing that the likelihood is more so that gasoline and certainly natural gas prices will be higher by year's end, not lower, but that's a whole separate discussion. So you've got this going on with huge demand for energy and that kind of thing, while at the same time, when you look at the average retailer, it's abysmal. And I've been saying for a while that the last hurrah for consumers before they hunker down and do bring about at least somewhat of a broader recession is that everybody still this year is taking those COVID delayed trips. Jeremy Siegel, the Wharton School professor, was out, and he's usually bullish on the economy, bullish on the stock market almost regularly, all the time. And he was even warning that you've got what he calls this YOLO attitude. You only live once. And so a lot of people that have still got some savings they were sitting on, some extra credit card availability to go out and spend money, they're taking their vacations, they're having fun, but they're already hunkering down elsewhere as the weaker retail picture shows. And when they get done with their summer travels, we're going to get to the end of the year and most likely will have more signs of a broader recession coming. It's still going to be different from historical ones. Among other reasons, there's still a lot of liquidity out there. But I think that this, all of this orgy of money printing and spending and living beyond our means that has been worse in the last 2 or 3 years than ever is going to catch up to us. And that's why I made my comment earlier in comparing us to China. That's where we're going to be. We're going to have a slow, dull ache for years to come, I believe, if we're lucky and don't have anything worse as far as a crash. We're going to have a slow, dull ache for years of people existing, trying to service debt, cutting corners, sitting on their hands, you know, buying plain label stuff instead of the big name brands, and traveling probably less in a year or two from now than they are right now.
I hate to be pessimistic, Chris Temple, but is this a perfect storm if, for example, that scenario plays out at the same time we see artificial intelligence ramping up and replacing people? That's a collision course that I don't think I want to be on.
No, and that's going to be a reason why I think some companies are going to look more to artificial intelligence to do some work that people are now. Look, I think a lot of what has been out recently, John, about artificial intelligence is overstated. You know, when you're texting on your phone and it auto-corrects something, that's artificial intelligence. When you're typing something on your typewriter, that's artificial intelligence. When you visit a website and a couple of similar things come up, maybe that you visited recently, that's all artificial intelligence. Yes, you've got some added means now where in a lot of other applications, there's going to be shortcuts that technology has given us to what humans used to do. We do things faster. We do things more efficiently. We do things better. So AI is not new, but I do believe it is improving in some areas. And yes, it is going to take away jobs from people. So that will compound things somewhat down the road, although I think the extent of that has been, in my view, overstated.
And if you've read some of my texts, you would probably say that guy is artificially intelligent, but that's a different story for a different day, Chris Temple. But right now, if we look at, and we're painting kind of a pessimistic picture, but it's also the reality of the situation. Should we go into a recession, cash will still be king, yes. And number two, I would imagine long term, there will be bargains, relatively speaking, in the stock market. So your advice to someone who's 25, who may not have college debt, who may have some cash there, they could really perhaps set up themselves to live pretty comfortably a little bit later on.
Well, I totally agree. And frankly, I think if I'm correct and we do get this slow, dull ache and we go into a recession, we have tighter times economically, but yet inflation and interest rates still stay higher than we got comfortable with over the last four decades or so, by and large, it actually makes the lost art to some extent of investing easier. Because contrary to this rally we've had the first half of 2023, in a lot of the big tech stocks and the AI stocks and things like that, those are the things that get revealed as being economically questionable as far as evaluations when we go into a recession. So if you go back only the last year, a lot of those stocks were down. You know, we had a broad decline. The S&P was right down 20%. The NASDAQ was down over 30. And yet a lot of value stocks did well last year. A lot of what I call the new fangs theme, not the old fangs, the new fangs did well, mostly commodity themes and stuff. And frankly, going forward, when you look at a still growing and, you know, record high global population, record high demand for energy of all kinds the world over. What the mix is going to be in years to come is going to, you know, move back and forth depending on how quickly we roll out the green economy and all that. But there is an enormous and, I believe, generational opportunity that we saw signs of in the last couple of years or so. Uranium, energy, oil and gas had a great year last year. The larger base metal stocks did well. And this year, everybody's ignored them again, despite the fundamentals for all these things not having changed long term, because the fun all of a sudden is in the NASDAQ again. It's in the artificial intelligence stocks again and stuff like that. People who are wise and patient and invest in needs that we're going to have in the future, not wants, but needs, are going to do well. Across the board, where a lot of commodities are concerned, we have years of underinvestment, structural imbalances going forward. In copper, uranium, oil and gas even, a lot of these things, there's just not enough out there because the Fed got to be, especially when in the case of the U.S., we got a lot of the supplies of these things from overseas. The Fed got to be the cryptocurrencies, the meme stocks, and all of this stuff that really is fleeting. And all the stuff that we need for our everyday life to build and rebuild society and infrastructure got passed by. And that's where a lot of the opportunities are going to be in the coming years.
Some things never change. You're talking about the parable of the 10 virgins, right?
Yes,
they go out,
exactly.
You know, the 10 virgins, they take their lamps. Five were foolish, five were wise, had the oil for their lamps, and we're seeing that happen in our economy right now. Chris Temple, editor and publisher of The National Investor, with his view on inflation and his pragmatism as well. Chris, as always, we thank you for your wisdom. God bless.
And you too, John. Thanks for having me. Good to be with you again.
Chris Temple here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. You and I have already seen the birth rate go down, not only here in the United States, but worldwide. It's something that certainly the Holy Father has talked about. And now when you superimpose science over this, there is something troubling that is coming out of laboratories here in the United States and around the world. We'll explore that with Father Tad Poholchek from the National Catholic Bioethics Center in Philadelphia next here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, today we'd like to thank David, who is listening in New Jersey, for donating his Chevy Caprice. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
Your Life Connected, the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
John Harper in for Drew this afternoon. He's on assignment. He'll be back later in the week here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. For those of you in the San Francisco Bay Area listening to Relevant Radio, you know that that is one of the tech capitals of the United States, as in Austin, Texas, and a number of other locations around. And so very often you'll drive by nondescript buildings that may house some research firms. In this particular case, there's a nondescript building in Berkeley, California. And behind that nondescript building, there is a biotech startup. That sounds good. What's interesting is the name of this biotech startup is Conception. And what they're doing in that nondescript building in Berkeley, California, is to make lab-grown human eggs. In other words, transforming options for creating families artificially. Think about the name of the company again, Conception. Father Tad Poholchek, our guest, is the Director of Education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center in Philadelphia. He earned his doctorate in neuroscience from Yale, did his postdoctoral work at Harvard. He is priest of the Diocese of Fall River and a longtime trusted voice here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. At what point in time, Father Tad, and it's great to reconnect with you here on the air, at what point in time as Catholics do we just push back and just say, no, enough? Can we stop this snowball from coming down the hill?
John, great to be with you again as well. Good question. I think we're in one of those moments where you say to yourself, the slope is pretty slippery. And this new technology that you're describing, it's called in vitro gametogenesis. is an example of extending a previous technology, which we're all familiar with, in vitro fertilization, the process of creating babies in test tubes. This goes one step further so that your starting materials, the sperm and the egg, come from standard old skin cells. So you could scrape some skin off of your forearm and use that as the starting point to initiate the whole process of getting either sperm or egg, which could then be combined to make a baby. At least that's the proposal here. It's been done in mice, but as you know, mice and humans are similar in some ways, but also very different in other ways. So it has not yet been done in humans. And the company you're describing, Conception, is attempting to do it for humans. But it's actually quite a complicated technical problem. So, you know, the issue of should we be pushing back that you're asking about, I think definitely the answer is yes. And we should be really taking steps to explain the foundational teachings of the church about the right way to bring new human life into the world. Because I think a lot of people are simply not familiar with that. They see kind of a smorgasbord of options out there that are forever expanding as scientists push these envelopes as far as they can. Yeah.
When I say push back as Catholics, Father Tad, it came to me in the most unusual way. Over the weekend, I was reading something about the new iPhone 15. What does that have to do with what we're talking about? And there is that natural tendency about wanting the next new shiny thing, about whatever comes down the pike with the latest and the greatest technology. And it hit me, at what point in time do we say, no, no more? I mean, certainly it's up to me as to whether or not I want to buy one of these things, but we just almost mindlessly accept the latest piece of tech news that comes down the pike from artificial intelligence. And boy, isn't that a Pandora's box to this. So I'm thinking to myself, all right, when do we just simply say no? And don't we have to do that as Catholics? And shouldn't we be mustering up Catholics en masse to say no, no more? It's our time to stand up and just say no, isn't it?
Well, I think what we need to do is to pause a little bit and reflect on what we call the technological imperative. Just because we can, should we? Well, obviously not. And so what this is really an invitation to is an invitation to ethics, to ask what are the good uses of technology and what are the misuses or the dangers of technology. And when we get into the arena of human beings and their creation, their procreation, their generation in laboratories, this opens up truly a Pandora's box, because you unleash remarkable powers of depersonalization. That's a big word, depersonalization. Yeah. But what right. we end up doing is we treat our offspring as objects to be manipulated, perhaps objects to be purchased at a local clinic, you know, maybe using other people's sex cells in order to do things like in vitro fertilization. So there are many, many ways here in which you introduce a kind of division between parents and children as parents are encouraged to go down this pathway.
Father Tad Pawlczyk with us, the Director of Education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center in Philadelphia. We are talking about what is happening right now in a lab in Berkeley, California, aiming at making lab-grown human eggs and just transforming the ways that families would be created. And, of course, you can join our conversation at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Father Tad, as you said, this is also an invitation to start the discussion about ethics. And with your background, a doctorate in neuroscience from Yale and the postdoctoral work at Harvard, and you and I have had this conversation on Relevant Radio on the old morning air show, you have been in these laboratories. Do you see ethics enter the laboratory with some of these experiments? Or maybe put it a different way, where are ethics in the laboratory?
Well, you know, John, there was recently a big meeting in Boston. And it was the International Society of Stem Cell Research. And at that meeting, there was an announcement about a synthetic embryo being produced. Now, you say to yourself, all right, a synthetic embryo. They're creating an embryo using stem cells, and that's something that hasn't been done before. It's a new way to create a human being, potentially. And so what kind of a reaction was there at this international meeting of stem cell research? Well, there were some press people there who reported it. It got out into the news, and it did sort of stir up some dust. But I have to say, I think we're in a place now where these kinds of stories, the one that we're talking about here or the breaking story at the International Society for Stem Cell Research, they happen with a certain kind of regularity, and people sort of lose touch with the flow of it, and it is complicated science. So the ethics for the average person isn't real clear. The scientists themselves are often driven by that technological imperative that we referred to earlier. They're like, you know, this type of research is so engaging, so interesting, I just want to go do it. And the ethical kind of backdrop tends to recede into the background. And that's unfortunate, because then they can move down a path of significant ethical violations. So this is an area that the church has an important voice in. But I think a lot of scientists also have not had much opportunity to plumb the depths of the church's teachings. I mean, to give you one example, there's a document that came out during John Paul II's pontificate. It was issued from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, and this was under Cardinal Ratzinger. It was a document called Donum Vitae, On the Gift of Life. And it's a remarkable document. You know, you read this document, it covers so many angles, so much wisdom, and really provides the kinds of foundational, if not groundbreaking, principles that one needs in order to be able to approach some of these complex questions that we're discussing, you know, on today's show. But how many people have spent time reading Donum Vitae? Very, right. Very few. You know, it's something that your average person and your average scientist doesn't really know much about. So I think we have that kind of lacuna here, this gap, as if you will. And that's a real concern, because if we don't have the kind of ethical formation that we need, we tend to approach these things from a selfish angle. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, isn't this something that could help my career as a researcher? Isn't this something, if I'm running a business, that could generate some serious capital? Those are the kinds of questions that tend to steamroll ethics at its heart. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we need to, in a sense, call people back to spending some time reflecting and studying already what the church offers on these issues. And the church, one more point here just on this, John, that I think is important. A lot of times you hear the church, people say, well, the church is behind the times. The church, you know, catches up after these things have broken. And that is not true at all. I mean, the church is always thinking way ahead of these things. The church had already clarified the basic principles around cloning of humans before Dolly the sheep was ever cloned. The church came out before the first example of successful human in vitro fertilization in 1978, more than two decades before that, Pope Pius XII had already addressed the principles about in vitro fertilization and why it's always wrong to do that as a way to bring new human beings into the world. So the church is ahead of the curve. It's just that most people don't know what the church has to offer here. They haven't spent time excavating the richness of our own teaching and tradition.
And we'll come back to that point with Father Tad Boholcik. First, Michelle joining our conversation at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Michelle's in California. Michelle, good afternoon. Welcome to Relevant Radio. You're on with Father Tad.
Hello. I'm a first-time caller, so please bear with me. My major concern... Hello?
No, I said welcome. Glad to have you here and joining our conversation.
Thank
We're blessed.
You. Okay, thank you. My major concern is this technology of infusing an egg with the DNA from someone's skin cells. To me, that would be very dangerous. It could be infused with the DNA from a man. Therefore, a child could be the biological child of two men, which would flout God's plan for creation.
As you mentioned that, Michelle and Father Tad, that is indeed one of the ideas behind this lab in Berkeley, California, is those in same-sex relationships, those who are transgender, can now, quote, have children.
Correct. That seems to be one of the angles that is being used to promote the development of this technology. So we find a situation where a man, let's say you have two men, one man could contribute skin cells that could be used to generate eggs. The other man could either contribute his own sperm, or if there were some problem there, he could contribute his skin cells, which could be turned into sperm. So then you would combine the sperm and egg from these two men to have genetic contributions from each. But you would have to be doing this, of course, through in vitro fertilization. And then because it's two men, you would have to have a surrogate mother who would gestate that baby.
Michelle, thanks for calling for the very first time. Thanks for being a member of our Relevant Radio family. That was a great question. Please call back more often, 888-914-9149, as we speak with Father Tad Baholchik from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. And we are talking about this startup company in Berkeley, California, ironically called Conception, making lab-grown human eggs. And there's big money behind this. They've already raised $40 million. Where do you get that kind of money for a startup lab like that?
It seems that there are a number of funding sources that will basically view the technology in the light of whether it has chances for succeeding. In other words, that's the key criterion, not a question of the rightness or the wrongness of the particular technology that's being deployed. So there does appear to be enough scientific ground here, because as I alluded to earlier, they have done this in mice and it works. So they're figuring it's just a matter of time and, you know, a few extra million dollars before they can make it work in humans. Now, even as I say that, John, it's important to understand this is a really complicated problem, because a woman's egg requires a follicle in her ovary in order to mature. And so what these companies are trying to do is to make a kind of artificial ovary in which that egg will mature. And that's really hard to do. So they're not that far along, although progress is being made. And so for that reason, you do really need, you know, millions of dollars and many graduate student man hours of slave labor, as I like to say. You know, these things are very, very challenging to get them to ultimately work.
We'll continue our conversation with Father Tad Baholchik and, of course, more of your calls at 888-914-9149 on making lab-grown human eggs and something that's happening right now in Berkeley, California, in a lab that's there. Father Tad talked a little bit about church teaching, and we'll go into that in depth along with your calls on the Drew Mariani Show here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, you can support Relevant Radio in many ways. Joining a giving society, donating a vehicle you don't need anymore, or donating a piece of land or other real estate. Donate now at relevantradio.com/property.
A groundbreaking advancement from the world of science. Scientists say they have created synthetic human embryos. They say they bypass the need to use sperm and eggs and use stem cells to create the embryos.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
And that's what we're talking about here on the Drew Mariani Show this afternoon. John Harper sitting in, Drew on assignment back later in the week. We're specifically talking about this startup firm called Conception, ironically enough. It's a biotech startup. It's in a nondescript building in Berkeley, California. And what they want to do is revolutionize the way humans reproduce just simply by using skin cells to create a new life. we are talking about this and putting it in perspective and giving you, empowering you on how to talk about this, not only with your families, but in your communities as well as we push back. Father Tad Poholchik earned his doctorate in neuroscience from Yale, his postdoctoral work at Harvard, and of course, a trusted voice here on Relevant Radio as the director of education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center in Philadelphia. Earlier, you were talking about church teaching, and here we are at the 55th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. What should the church be doing right now to amplify that beautiful encyclical from Paul VI? Because if it were ever more needed to be heard by more Catholics, it's right now, Father Tad.
I think your question about what needs to be done is an important one, and I think it's something we all have to contribute to in the sense of, first, ourselves, you know, spending some time to make sure we have a basic familiarity with what the church teaches. And let me just give you an example. We do a lot of education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center in Philadelphia. And one of the things that happens a lot, we encounter high school teachers in Catholic schools who come to us and they say, you know, my students are asking me to explain to them why it's wrong to make a test tube baby. And I'm kind of not too sure how to answer that question. So I think, you know, right there for us to start from what we don't know and to be very honest about that, and then to take some steps and to really immerse ourselves enough that we can give some kind of, you know, brief elevator response, but hopefully accurate. Because just to that question, John, as you can imagine, many people, the quick answer they might say is, oh, when you do in vitro fertilization, when you make a test tube baby, oh, you also end up making other embryos, extra embryos who get frozen. And that's why it's wrong. Well, that's not actually why it's wrong. That's what we call collateral damage that happens when you do IVF. But the real reason it's wrong is because you are transposing the creation of human life. You're moving it away from that body-to-body self-giving between spouses where their love is fruitful and turning it into a laboratory or even a commercial project where the only thing you do is donate your sex cells to somebody else who then takes it and turns it into a project and produces children in this impersonal way that doesn't involve the gift of self of one spouse to another. So that the real root issue there is that we are stepping into a kind of new world where we don't safeguard the origins of our own children and instead say that what matters more than anything is what the parent wants. If someone says, I want to be a parent, that's all that counts. That trumps the considerations about what actually is good for children here. Sure. And, you know, treating them as products to be generated is going to be a move that objectifies them and that treats them as objects. So this is an area that I think we have a lot to do in terms of explaining the wisdom of the church, that marital embrace between husband and wife is a fruitful one, and it's the manner that our Lord set in motion at the beginning as the proper context or setting in which human life is transmitted, because then we receive it as a gift. It's no longer a demanded sort of a thing that we can go purchase or, you know, manipulate our own cells to kind of make it happen. We rather give ourselves to our spouse in that loving embrace and await the fruitful gift from the Lord God, who is the source of all life. So that's a totally different dynamic than sort of, you know, saying we're going to make this happen through my own efforts, through our own resolve. And often the man will say, you know, I'll donate sperm as often as necessary. The woman will say, I'll be super ovulated to generate eggs, as many as we need. They say, we'll empty our bank account to make this happen, et cetera. That's a very, very different reality that one is turning to. This is no longer the two becoming one flesh and petitioning the giver of life for that incredibly beautiful gift, but rather this is our project. We will take this and make it occur so that we as parents, so we can become parents and satisfy our own plans and determinations here. So very, very different. And I think it's important that we, you know, learn how to share this understanding, because truly the Lord's designs over the handing on of the gift of human life are beautiful designs. They're sacred designs. And we violate them, you know, at tremendous risk. And, you know, to go back to the extra embryos, I mean, that's just, I mentioned it as collateral damage, but there's always collateral damage when we step outside of God's plan for us. And many times when you go to these clinics and generate these embryos, some of them are simply poured down the sink. You know, they're just lost that way. So many, many tragedies, human tragedies here that arise in the wake of disordered decisions to go against the plan of the Lord God for how we hand on this beautiful sacred gift.
Father Tad Pohlczyk with us on the Drew Mariani Show. He's the Director of Education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center in Philadelphia. Joining our conversation in Oakland, California, 888-914-9149. Dee, welcome to Relevant Radio. You're on with Father Tad. Good afternoon. Hi, Dee, are you there? Yeah, that's you, Dee. Go right ahead. You're on with Father Tad. Welcome.
Oh, yes, thank you so much. I'm just talking about the legal aspect of this matter, because these are ideas, and if we're talking about ethics only at this point, these are just ideas floating in the air. It has to look at some legal aspects, too.
Yeah, I'm just going to put you on hold for a moment there because your phone is breaking up. Father, I don't know if you can talk to those legal aspects of that, but that has to be something that is as important as anything else that's happening in this lab in Berkeley, California.
You know, the law is a very important teacher, really important. And when the laws go bad, when the laws go wrong, or when the laws fail to prohibit certain types of actions, it's bad for all of us. We send the wrong message. And I think we've witnessed this. We had 50 years of Roe v. Wade where abortion was legal. And when finally that unjust law was overturned, you had people who had become completely accustomed to doing the wrong thing because the law had been their teacher. So I think, yes, the point being raised by Dee is a very important one. We need to make sure that our laws track with true ethics, with that which is right and good and beautiful, and not that we allow our laws to be written in such a way that they allow for wrongs to become standard behaviors.
And since you brought it up, a big picture question about Roe versus Wade, are you surprised by the numbers of Americans who support abortion, even some Catholics? And also, while we do pray memoraries and we're working on 600 million memoraries to start converting souls and changing minds and communities and state capitals, what should we do beyond prayer to be more demonstrative as Catholics to change minds and change hearts and save lives of children?
Well, I think the issue of what should be done to change hearts and minds, it's a slow process. And when you have a conscience that has been deflected from the truth, and maybe where bad choices have been repetitively made, there's the old saying, he who commits a sin becomes a slave to sin. There's a lot of work that needs to be done in that kind of conversion. And that's the tragedy of the slippery slope. We don't realize how slippery it is. And in these biotech arenas, we've moved very quickly into them without the kind of circumspection and reflection, you know, that you and I, John, have had a chance to go through a little bit in today's show. And once we can do that, that begins to set up a new voice of conscience that's open to the truth. And that can be a powerful new force for good. So we have to start where we are. We have to acknowledge where we are. But then at the same time, to be clear that these lines are well-defined and that the church offers us great clarity to be able to step away from these types of bad choices that tempt us routinely along the path of the biosciences in the area of biomedical research.
Let's just bring in Julie for one more quick question, listening on Relevant Radio 93KHJ in Los Angeles. Hi, Julie. Quickly with Father Tad Pahulchik. Welcome.
Okay, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Real quick, Father, my question. It came to my mind when I heard about this scientific, you know, procedure that they're going to do. This is going to be a plus for the LGBT community. They're going to start probably their propaganda, whatever you want to call it. What do you think about that?
That's a very distinct possibility. It's interesting that in the NPR National Public Radio write-up on this that just came out, I think, yesterday or the day before, that the two CEOs, there's a CEO and a chief scientific officer at this conception company, they acknowledge that both of them are gay and that the reason they are pursuing this research is precisely because of what you said, that they want to find a way to generate a child that will have genes from both of them.
Both of them. Father Tad Pahulchik, as always, thank you for your wisdom. Julie, thanks for the question. Father Tad Pahulchik, the Director of Education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center in Philadelphia. Rest assured, we'll be talking about this much more here on Relevant Radio. Father Tad, thank you. God bless you. We'll be back again tomorrow for Drew here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.